A series of legal and regulatory changes have affected small business federal contracting, and more changes are in the pipeline. For an update in this week's Legal Loop, we turn to Devin Hewitt, a partner at Protore Law. Devin, welcome back.
Thank you. Good morning.
So there have been a lot of changes over the last couple of years. Review for us what you think are the biggest ones.
Well, there have been a series of changes affecting small businesses, primarily because that has been a push of this administration. The most significant rules were issued about a year ago, first having to do with representations made by contractors and the penalties associated with false certifications. And this, of course, has been news periodically over the years, where you often see on the first page of the Washington Post a contractor who has been certifying itself as small, but indeed is being either having a partner or a subcontractor that's a large business that's really controlling, or somehow is really a large business but is falsely certifying in order to get small business contracts. So there was a push to put in tighter controls on that. There were also rules issued about task orders and bundling contracts, and particularly the applicability of SBA small business preferential policies to the GSA schedule and the federal supply schedules. And then we've seen a rotating or cyclical issuance of regulations addressing size. Every solicitation that comes out or procurement has assigned a NACE code, an industry code, and an accompanying size standard. And in order to qualify for those procurements, the business must be small under those size standards. SBA had not been reviewing those standards regularly, so a lot of small businesses felt that they were out of date and therefore weren't eligible for procurements. They really felt that that the industry did consider them small. So SBA has been issuing proposed rules and increasing size standards pretty regularly over the last year or so. And then, of course, there are some exciting developments for small business that came out of the House earlier this spring and are on the calendar for the Senate in this fall.
All right. So the ones that you just mentioned, the size standards, declarations that businesses make of their size and so forth, have any of these had any practical effect on procurement or the practice of contracting that you have noticed so far?
Well, I think with the size standards, absolutely. People are watching them very carefully because small business contracting is getting far more competitive, as is the case, of course, with all procurements because of shrinking federal budgets. So, yes, people are watching these increase in size standards. It's affecting a lot of small businesses' ability to stay small and therefore still be able to capture this type of business. There's a frequent complaint that once small businesses, quote-unquote, graduate from their size standard, they fail because then they're suddenly competing with very large businesses, and there's no sort of interim area where they can sort of transition to the big boys. So the ability to continue to shore up your foundation with small businesses contracts is really quite important to small businesses. So for me, in terms of practical impact, the size standards are really the rules that are making the biggest difference. With regards to the other rules, well, I think certainly the principles applying to task order contracts is important because it's always been confusing. People used to think that the GSA schedule was sort of exempt from all the rules and regulations that impact small businesses and actually encourage the government to award contracts to small businesses. Now that's been clarified, and the majority of people who hold federal contracts hold them under the GSA schedule. So that's going to have a practical impact. With regard to the representations and certifications and the increasing penalties for fraud, I don't think that that's going to, in the short term, change a lot of attitudes. I think it's raising awareness, and I still think there's a long way to go for small businesses to realize the complexities involved in self-certifying your size. So I think that we're going to see more of an impact on a long-term basis with regard to that rule.
Because the contracting officers, from where they sit in the government and I guess the people behind them, it's kind of an opaque view other than what the contractor says it is. They often don't have the resources to really delve into all of these small businesses and find out if they reach or below those thresholds established in the rules and in the law.
Well, you're exactly right, Tom. The real monitoring, if you will, occurs through your competition. Your competition knows or thinks it knows whether or not you're really eligible for a procurement. So generally, people are policing this area through protests, size protests in particular. The GAO, interestingly, 2 weeks ago came out with a report about the failure of certain contracting officers to actually monitor certain performance requirements under small business contracts to ensure that some of these regulations are being complied with. But that is, as you've mentioned, has been a problem forever because of lack of resources and, frankly, because of some of the complexity of these rules. I mean, there are just so many rules in government contracting, and reduction in resources, and the combination of that is really deadly to enforcement.
But hasn't there been some clarification to what happens when, as a result of a contract, a business that's small exceeds the threshold as a result of that contract?
Well, there has been some clarification on what exactly happens. But again, that generally is being policed through the protest process. And while the impact of a false certification may be clear, what's not entirely clear still is what amounts to a false certification. Whether or not you are small under a particular size standard isn't always a black and white determination. There are a lot of factors that go into it, a lot of calculations. There's a concept of affiliation. So I think it's a fairly complex area that unless a small business consults with a lawyer, it's a little bit at risk of interpreting the rules itself.
All right, so they should say to themselves, let's call Devin before we do this.
Well, I have the same thought, Tom. Thanks for mentioning it.
We're speaking with Devin Hewitt. She's a partner at the Protore Law Firm and an expert on federal contracting. And you've also presented that the National Defense Authorization Act for fiscal 2013 has rules that are now pending, and there's some new changes up ahead. What's
yes,
coming
well,
up?
Actually, we've got two Defense Authorization Act rules in play. We have the fiscal year 2013 NDAA, which was a real boon for small business. There were a lot of important rules in there. However, SBA has been very slow to implement them, and actually there was a congressional hearing, I think, in July in which SBA was chastised for its failure to implement some of these very important rules. One of the principal rules that is pending is the extension of SBA's 8A mentor-protege program from solely applicable to the 8A program to all small businesses. And the mentor-protege program, in a nutshell, allows a big business to partner with the small business for procurements without the stigma of something called affiliation. That is a determination that the two companies are connected in such a way that the size of both will be aggregated in a size determination. And if you're aggregating your size with a large business, the result is going to be that you're going to be large and not eligible for the size standard. But the mentor-protege program currently applicable to the 8A program exempts these partnerships from affiliation, and the proposal is to extend this benefit, which is a considerable benefit, both for large businesses and small businesses, because large businesses now have access to small business contracts, which previously they couldn't have access to. The proposal is to extend this program to all small businesses and all small business procurements. So this is a significant change, which will, quadruple, if not exponentially, increase the availability of small business contract dollars, both to small businesses and large businesses.
And what is the status of that rule at this point?
Well, good question. It's quote-unquote pending, and because of the complexity and the impact, and frankly, the considerable increase in resources SBA will have to amass to administer this program, I think we're probably a year away from seeing that being implemented, notwithstanding, Congress's complaints about the delay. They're going to transfer all current agency mentor-protege programs to SBA. SBA is now going to monitor this huge mentor-protege program. I think it requires a lot of practical reallocation of resources and restructuring, so I think that's not going to be immediately on the horizon.
And you said also there are National Defense Authorization Act for fiscal year 2015 changes
right.
coming.
Well, these are another series of pretty significant bills that came out of the House at the end of the first quarter. I think the most notable rules that have been proposed are increasing the government-wide small business goal from 23% to 25%. Now, I don't know if you know this, but fiscal year 2013 was the first time in 8 years that the government actually met the 23% government-wide small business contracting goals. So now the proposal is to increase it to 25%, but I doubt that's really going to go anywhere given the fact that the government just met the 23%, and raising the goal now would I think, just be a little much. The other two big issues in that series of bills, one is extending the ability to award sole source contracts to women-owned small businesses. That ability is already existing under SBA's other programs, the 8A program, the SDVOSB program, the HUBZone program, but it's not currently available to the Women-Owned Small Business program. So that has been a proposal which I'm hopeful will pass. And then the most interesting and perhaps controversial rule that came out of those bills was proposing to move the SDVOSB and the VOSB certification process from the Department of Veterans Affairs to SBA. Because, of course, SBA monitors all the other small business programs and the application eligibility and certification of businesses under those programs. So the theory is that they are better equipped than the VA to handle CVE verification and certification of veteran-owned small businesses.
And weren't there some celebrated cases where VA itself missed the fact that someone describing themselves as a service-disabled veteran-owned small business really was not?
Well, in VA's defense, every agency, quote-unquote, has celebrated cases, or SBA does as well. I mean, every year or so, GAO will issue a report where SBA has missed that an 8A contractor is really a large business, or a hub zone is really a large business or isn't in a hub zone. So that isn't, the VA's weakness alone. But what has happened is that initially when this verification process was started, and VA has a separate statute authorizing preferential programs for veterans-owned small businesses. And so they, pursuant to that statute, they had their own verification program. And that didn't start until late 2008. And they were new to it, and there were so many veteran-owned businesses that needed to go through the pipeline. There was a huge backlog. The program they implemented, both on an IT and programmatic level, was just rife with concerns. SDVOSBs that felt they were legitimately veteran-owned businesses were being rejected. Other companies were passing through that shouldn't have passed through. There were a number of congressional hearings. And really, they had a lot of trouble and a lot of exposure in terms of not doing it right. I will say that they've done it a lot better now. I think the program is far better, far more seamless, and a lot quicker. So I think the kinks have really been worked out. But the bad taste in a lot of congressional representatives' mouth lingers, and this seemed to be a good area to make a point. I'm not quite sure it will succeed, but they've certainly made a point in terms of their disapproval or dissatisfaction with the way VA handled this.
Well, this straightening out of all of that, of all those issues around the SDVOSB comes at a timely time, because really now there are many more service-disabled, in reality, veterans coming back that will be starting businesses.
Well, that's absolutely true. You know, with the shutdown or the reduction in forces abroad, more military personnel are going out into the workforce and developing their own businesses, which is terrific. But another reason that we're seeing a lot more SDVOSBs is a result of a change in the rule several years ago. It used to be that certain small business programs, like the HUBZone program and the 8A program, had priority in terms of their applicability to procurements over other type of programs, including veteran-owned small business procurements. But that was straightened out through a law a couple of years ago. Now they're on par with all the programs, so anytime a contracting officer wants to set aside something for small businesses, they have the ability to choose among the programs without having to give priority. So the combination of allowing a small business set aside to actually be a veteran-owned small business set aside, combined with the recent influx of veterans into the marketplace, has really increased the contract awards to veteran-owned small businesses dramatically.
All right. Devin Hewitt is a partner at Pro Tore Law. Thank you for that complete review for us.
Thank you, Tom.